matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. So I'd like to say happy Sunday, but I feel like black people in America are not happy. I feel like our hearts are heavy at the moment because of all of the violence, all of the deaths of young black men at the hands of police officers that are reoccurring again. It's like, I don't know. There's a lot going on. And so I'm going to try to keep everything straight, but there is a lot going on in these streets. So aside from the fact that last week we reported on the death of Midwin Charles, who was a legal analyst, legal eagle, Haitian American, woman from Brooklyn, New York, who passed away suddenly. We also talked about DMX, who, you know, passed away. They're claiming it was drug overdose, but, you know, he's no longer. Black Rob recently passed away. Those of you who, again, are part of the hip hop culture, those of us who grew up in the 90s, early 2000s, that, you know, when we were in middle school, Bad Boy was it. Bad Boy Records. Everybody was obsessed with Bad Boy. Black Rob was signed to Bad Boy Records at one point. You might know him for his iconic song, Whoa. Those of us who really listen to him know Let's Get It. There was a whole bunch of like hits from Black Rob, and, you know, just talking to my friends, and we're just like, man, like our childhood is flashing before our eyes. Like all of these people we grew up on are now passing away. And at young ages, right? DMX, 50, Black Rob, 51 years old. Like these are young people who are passing, and it's crazy. So there's those deaths, right? And now we're dealing again with the, I don't know if I'm going to call it a rise, but we're seeing the police brutality thing back in the media again, right? And it's crazy because we are currently watching the George Floyd murder trial happened, right? Like currently happening. And it's crazy because as we're watching the George Floyd murder trial, praying to get some sort of justice, like 10 miles away, Duante Wright gets shot. 20-year-old boy gets shot by a police officer, right? Who mistook a taser for a gun, or a gun for a taser, however you want to say it. Right. Either way, she was supposed to be pulling out a taser, and instead she pulled out a gun and shot the kid. Right. He's dead. 20 years old, left behind a child, a baby. Right. But then, interestingly enough, Duante was murdered by the police officer on April 11th. But we're now starting to talk about the 13-year-old boy in Chicago that was shot on March 29th, Adam Toledo, who was also shot by a police officer. And so, you know, it's one of those things where none of this is new, right? We can't be shocked. None of this is new. You know, this is what we're catching on video. Imagine all of the deaths at the hands of police officers that we do not know about, right? That are not accounted for, that did not make the news. So it's a really tough time for black people in America. And the only thing I'll say is this. I saw a post the other day that said, listen, people, it's okay to take that time that you need to process what's going on. For those of us who are working the corporate plantation, you know, our jobs, they love to try to bring up, you know, how do we do better? How do we do this? How do we do that? I think sometimes it's okay to disconnect a little bit. Like today is not a good day, guys. Clearly everybody's watching the news. But I think that it's okay to step back sometimes and really to process what's going on and to take a temperature check, because I think, you know, we see these images constantly. We are, you know, back to back, we are hearing about this type of violence that's being inflicted on our people. And that's just outside of everything else that Black people are going through, right? So sometimes, you know, we all wear capes. We are all superheroes just trying to move through the day. And, you know, we get hit with this news and we just keep moving and we don't really take time to process how we really feel, how we're affected by this news, right? Because even though we might not have known the victims of any of these murders personally, they're still part of the Black community. They are still ours, right? And it affects us because we have children. We have connections with children in the community. And so it's one of those things where it can eat at you subconsciously without even knowing. So just take some time to process what's been happening and really, you know, find your ground, I guess, with all of this. So that's what I'll say with that. So today we have an amazing show with an amazing guest by the name of Jennifer Wilshire. She's a licensed clinical social worker and the founder of Lifeline Therapy Center. She is going to be talking about autism, as April is Autism Awareness Month. And so Jen is going to talk about autism, you know, on a clinical perspective very briefly, but she's really going to talk about autism as a parent of a child who is autistic. So she is coming at you both with the clinical perspective, but really more so from the personal perspective, right? So you definitely want to stay tuned for that. It's going to be an amazing show. I'm going to give a warning. It's a long interview, but it's so insightful and it's so helpful. And autism awareness is something that is not being raised enough, particularly in the Black community. And I'm telling you, when you listen to this interview, a lot of things are going to start clicking in your head. So you definitely want to stay tuned for that. So before we get to the meat of the show, it is now time for our preliminaries. So it is now time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
I'm on fleek, lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is vaccinista. Vaccinista is a person who gets the vaccine and flaunts it while high-end shopping, taking trips, and going to parties. Example, once Lisa got the vax, she turned into such a vaccinista. So I can kind of relate to this definition because over the weekend, I was trying to get my exercise on. I went to Prospect Park and I went to walk, right? And I observed a concert in the park. There had to have been like thousands of people in Prospect Park, right? So my assumption is this. A lot of people have gotten vaccinated, and so they feel like they can be out and about and they can do whatever they want. No masks, no nothing, no social distancing. However, I believe now, reading this definition, that this is what's happening. These people they got their vaccine and now they think that they're untouchable, unstoppable, and they can do whatever they want. So finally, a term and a definition that I can get behind. Good job, Urban Dictionary. So it is now time for our Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week. So this week's Haitian Creole word or phrase of the week is bon bagay. Repeat after me. Bon bagay. So bon bagay literally means good stuff. So the next time you want to say good stuff or somebody gives you some really great Haitian food, you can tell them and impress them with your new Creole phrase with bon bagay. So now we are on to the big up of the week.
Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up.
So this week's big up of the week goes to the residents of Richland County in South Carolina. So for those of you who may not be aware, you know, this, I don't even know what to say about this, but white people are just trying it all week. They're trying it all week, all month. And so there was a young man, I don't remember. I think he goes by DeAndre online, but I don't know if that's actually his name. Either way, there was a young black male living in this community, walking on the sidewalk. Apparently, he had gotten into something with this white girl. I don't know if it was earlier that day or earlier that week. Apparently, I think her shorts had fallen and he tried to help her pull it up. I don't know. Either way, this girl accused this young black man of accosting her. So she skipped like every house on the block and went straight to this drill sergeant's house. This drill sergeant goes by the name of Jonathan Pentland, something like that. And so I guess she notified him of what this young black man was doing. And so he came out and tried to get buck with the young black boy, like on video. I saw the video. He was pushing the young boy. The young boy was trying to walk away and he kept coming after him. And so the people of the community, I don't believe they all lived in that Richland community, but word spread. And next thing you know, Jonathan Penland had literally like, I don't know if it was all of the black people in South Carolina in front of his home. Like they literally pulled up and they posted up in front of this man's home, like pulled up. And, you know, you can go on social media and you can see the video clips of these individuals protesting outside of this man's home. It got so bad that apparently the drill sergeant, the army drill sergeant, was then transferred to Fort Jackson. Some even claim that they put him in some sort of witness protection program because him and his wife were afraid of, you know, what could happen to them. Because, I mean, it was beautiful. To me, it was beautiful. This is how black people show up for each other. This young black boy wasn't doing anything wrong. He gets approached by this, you know, tall, buff white guy who is apparently an army drill sergeant, questioning him. And then again, like literally pushing him. You see him pushing this young kid who is trying to get away, And so the community was like, we're not here for this. We're not tolerating this. We're pulling up, period. And that's exactly what they did. So they drove out this man from his community, from his house, from his base. And now homeboy has to, I guess, start over again somewhere else, as he should, because let this be a lesson to you, white people. Black people are tired. We are tired. And we will pull up. We will show up and we will do what we need to do to get the justice that we deserve. So the next time you think that you're going to call the police on a black person for no ass reason, the next time you think you're going to take matters into your own hand and stick your nose in business that does not concern you, the next time you think you're going to put your hand on a young black child, remember that the community is watching and the community will literally pull up, show up, and show out. Good job, black people. Good job. So the womp womp of the week goes to former officer Kim Potter of the Minneapolis Police Department. For those of you who may not be aware, Kim Porter was the officer that fatally shot and murdered DeWante Wright in Minneapolis, Minnesota. What's interesting about this case is that Kim Potter is no rookie. She was a 26-year veteran of the Minneapolis, Minnesota Police Department, particularly in this in the area of Brooklyn Center. She was a former union president, which means she knew the rules and regulations. And she somehow confused a taser from a regular gun. Now, I am not a police officer. I could only go by what other police officers and the internet has conveyed to me with respect to the difference between a taser and an actual gun. And even those who are police officers themselves have said that it is quite difficult, even in the heat of the moment, to confuse the two. A lot of shadiness going on here. But I think the thing that comes to my mind is, what is going on with Minneapolis, Minnesota? In the last 5 years, Philando Castile was murdered by police officers. George Floyd was murdered by police officers. Now Duante Wright was murdered by police officers. These all have taken place within the last 5 years, right? But for me, I'm just wondering, do you guys not want to take a break? Are you guys not tired? I mean, it's never a good time to take the life of a black man or a black individual, period. But I feel like with being under the microscope as many times as the Minneapolis police has been under the microscope, that maybe they might want to take a break. Maybe they might want to just be extra, extra careful. I don't know. Either way, we'll definitely talk about this maybe on IG Live Thursday, or maybe in a subsequent episode. But it's hard out here for black people, and something has just got to give. We are now on to the meat of the show. I'm here with my very special guest, Jennifer Wilshire. Jennifer, please say hello.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me, Rita.
Of course, of course. It's definitely been some time in the making. I feel like that's my spiel every week. Like, yeah, we were supposed to do this forever and it didn't happen. But no, this definitely was something in the making. It's just, you know, time figuring out what was the best topic, because you do so many things. I feel like you have so much to offer in so many different areas.
Yeah, it's so true.
It was true. Finding which aspect to get her in on. But for those of you who are wondering, I do know Jennifer personally.
Yes, we are sister friends.
Yeah, sister friends from the same church community, same background. So it's been a lot of years. So it's great to see that, you know, the friendship is still, you know, maintained itself and that we're all doing amazing things.
Yay. Yes, absolutely. I love it.
So Jennifer, just tell the people a little bit about who you are and what you do and where you're from.
Okay, great. Hey, y'all. I am always, first and foremost, yes, I am Caribbean, but I am a Brooklyn girl, originally from Brooklyn, New York, but raised as if I was in the islands, because my parents were adamant that that was, you know, I'm not from New York, I'm from them. So they were pretty intricate about making sure that there were certain things instilled in myself and from, and my siblings, excuse me. And so, but yet and still, I rep Brooklyn, New York, no matter where I am, that's where I'm from. Before I'm anything, I'm a woman first. I am a woman of faith, a lover of music, a lover of books, avid reader. I love being able to connect and spend time with friends and family, but most of all, being able to really just assess myself. I'm constantly doing that because that's what I do. As on a professional level. So people will be like, are you psychoanalyzing me? And I'm like, if only you knew how much I try not to do that to you. I'm often doing it to myself to just make sure that I'm in, you know, the right sphere of where I should be, because I believe in self-improvement. on a regular basis, on a daily basis. One of my mottos is just to be better today than I was the day before, you know? And so that's always my go-to, always part of my goals, but that's who I am.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So April is, it's many awarenesses, but it's also Autism Awareness Month. And, you know, I realize that this is a conversation that doesn't tend to happen very much, especially in the Black community. We don't really talk about autism. You know, a lot of us might only know that it's Autism Awareness Month because, you know, we did a Google search or we saw somebody post it on social media, but it doesn't really get the recognition that the other awarenesses, you know, get. And I find that it's something that most people have some sort of connection to, whether they realize it or not. And there's so much, like there is so much conversation about it on a different spectrum in terms of like stigma and myths and things like that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like what actually is autism, who, you know, who is affected by autism, we really don't know what, you know, we really don't have any answers to that. So I wanted to talk to you today because I know that you have, you know, firsthand knowledge as to what autism is, you know, how you deal with like with autism, how you address, you know, autism. And so I just want you to share a little bit about your connection to autism.
Absolutely. So, you know, as a by trade and by profession, I didn't say what I do as well, but by profession, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And basically I practice psychotherapy and focus in my practice with individuals. And one of the things that I used to do, I don't do it as much, but I used to work directly as well with families with children with special needs. And so I was definitely avid about supporting them, helping them to deal with that and to process that, because it's a lot. You know, once you hear that diagnosis, and I speak also on a personal level, y'all, because my son was diagnosed with autism when he was 3 years old. But as a professional and a therapist in my field, it's something that's in my DSM-5, which is the diagnostic statistical manual that's used to diagnose psychiatric mental illnesses. And it's very much so in there. And it's also a matter of people dealing with everyday issues. And one of those issues is autism. Parent, whether you're a parent, you're a caretaker, you're a sibling of someone who has autism, you feel neglected. You feel like you can't really identify. It's hard to fit in. It's hard to really express what that means for you as a sibling, as a parent, as anyone who's connected to it. And so for me, the way that I know it firsthand is definitely with my son, hearing that diagnosis. And the only reason why I believe I was able to do that, not only was it the maternal instinct, which I believe we all have who are mothers, to know that something's not right with our baby. But for me, it was also being in the field. So I saw the signs, I saw certain things, and I was like, okay, I think I know what this is, but you never want to put your child in a box.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you want to be a realist.
So what exactly is autism?
So autism is a neurological disorder. Oftentimes people automatically assume that, you know, it's something that there is implication that you have a mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. And that's not true. What happens, however, is that with autism, you can have a comorbid or dual disorder, which would be a mental health disorder, such as depression, anxiety, bipolar, schizophrenia, whatever it might be. And this is also something that can be apparent in children because of the fact if they're diagnosed very young, we don't, again, like to put our children in boxes. We don't want to do that. But the best way to be able to treat and to get help and to support a person, we need to know what we're working with, you know? So basically it's a neurological disorder that has a significant impact on a person's thinking, socialization, and how they experience their emotions. That's how I would define it, you know? And that's really what it does come down to, yeah.
Okay. Because whenever I hear about autism, it's usually in children, right? I normally hear about autism in children. Usually elementary school age is where I'll hear that a child has been diagnosed with autism or that a child is autistic. But is it something that an adult can receive a diagnosis of?
Yes. So what happens with autism in adults, and that's something I have seen with just people who I have encountered in passing, no one I've worked with in therapy or no one that I know personally. I do have a friend who has identified with autism. But the reason why I say I didn't know personally is because recently the DSM created a shift where I can't tell you the exact year, y'all, and I don't want to misquote it and then people come after me, come for me. No, don't do that. So what I will say, though, is because there was such a thing at one point where there was a distinction between autism and what's called Asperger's syndrome. So Asperger's disorder is basically more so a matter of a person who has socialization issues. That's really a bigger focus of where they are. Their communication tends to be very on point. Their IQ tends to be average, if not above average. But someone who was diagnosed with Asperger's would have issues as far as socialization in terms of not being able to really pick up on social cues, really fixating and being preoccupied with one specific thing. So if their thing was Star Trek, somehow they're always going to bring that back into conversation. They're always going to somehow focus back in it. If you can be talking about something very serious, something that has nothing to do with it, but somehow they'll bring it back to that. And then it can turn other people off who are trying to interact with this person because it's like, I'm talking about how my cat died, you know, and you're here talking about Star Trek. What does that have to do with the other? And especially for children, you know, they're not able, they don't have that mental capacity to go ahead and say, okay, maybe they're going through something. Maybe they have an issue. It's like, no, you're mean. You're not nice. You're selfish, you know. But Asperger's, the way that it shows up, especially in adults, is that they still might have a lot of socially awkward tendencies. They're the ones that we kind of, you know how Ruth is. That's just who she is. She's different, you know. So they have those tendencies, whereas autism, it's more so the speech limitations are very, they're usually quite prevalent, not in all, but in many, if not most cases of someone who was diagnosed with autism. But to go back to that change real quick. So what happened is that now it's now called autism spectrum disorder or ASD, where basically it includes, it's like an umbrella to include someone who was once diagnosed with Asperger's. They're just considered to be on the spectrum. So you have ASD. And so that's how it's covered or brought together.
Okay. And it's interesting you mentioned spectrum because I find that in everyday language, lay people are like, we're just so used to saying, oh, that person's on a spectrum or that person has to be on a spectrum. So yeah. I'm assuming it's kind of, it's all encompassing with this umbrella, this Asperger's possible autism, where if someone's acting a little weird, we're just like, this person's on a spectrum.
Right. Exactly. And we want to be careful about what that looks like because there's so much controversy right now as far as autism to the point, Rita, where this year, usually I will emphasize and commemorate like April 2nd, which is Autism Awareness Day. Mm-hmm. And so it's a significant thing. However, the controversy currently is that's something that's backed by a society that's known as Autism Speaks. And they have had a lot of backlash lately, not even lately, like for quite some time, because the promotion or the message that many people have felt from them has been to cure autism. Let's get rid of it. There's like this negative stigma put on it, or that a lot of services weren't necessarily put forth as much as could be put forth from the organization. And it was like, what are you really doing for us? You're like this, the one of the biggest or well-known companies that's supposed to represent and be there for us. And I call you and I can't connect with anyone. I can't really get some of the services or supports that I thought I would get, you know. And I myself, and this is not to knock the organization, but I myself, they weren't the go-to for me when my son was diagnosed. They were very nonchalant and not as helpful as I would have thought. It was really the district that really, they were the vehicle to really get me going as far as early intervention. And then from there, the school district that I had my son in. But definitely as far as the spectrum, you know, we say, when you see one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism, to mean that each individual person who's diagnosed it shows up differently in them. There's no one else like them. They are unique, and that's to be embraced and accepted instead of it just being a matter of awareness and let's look for a cure, which is something that the message for Autism Speaks was for quite some time. Right now, the message is instead, you know, make it red. I think that was the hashtag. I know I'm messing it up. I gotta look. But it was, it's basically autism acceptance, you know, accepting the fact that your child, your son, your daughter, your loved one who has autism has it. And this is a part of who they are. And it doesn't make them any less. It doesn't put any less value on their lives or who they are and what they can contribute to the world or to our world, you know?
So I know that we got into some of the signs a little earlier. You had briefly mentioned, you know, speech as one of the kind of signs, I guess, to identify whether or not you may want to take your child to go get evaluated. But are there other signs that parents who are possibly, you know, wondering, something's off with my child, I don't know what it is, you know, maybe it's autism, but I don't know. So aside from like speech, is there any other signs that can signal that there might be an issue?
Oh, absolutely. So I know for myself, with my son, it was also a matter as to how he was playing with his toys. And so, you know, they put on the label of all the toys, you know, 3 months to 12 months, whatever. And so, you know, as a new mom, because he was my first, I followed all the guidelines and I would pick up these toys and he would just do random things with the toys. It wasn't challenging or stimulating, something that it would in a child his age to pick up on. Oh, okay, let me go ahead and put these pieces together. It's a puzzle. Instead, he would throw it over his head and then he would go back and get it and throw it again. So it was like that. It was that repetitive movement, fixation on certain things. And it changed consistently for my son, where it was different things at different ages. So right now he's 9 years old, but his new thing is ceiling fans. So once he sees them, he stops dead in his track and he has to comment on it. So it's not like how it used to be when he was younger, because he has language, thankfully, which is a great blessing for us to be able to communicate with him. You know, he'll comment on it, but he'll stay on the conversation a little longer than the average person just commenting on there's a ceiling fan. You know, he puts a lot of emphasis on it. And so you want to be mindful about that. You want to be mindful about eye contact. If there's minimal eye contact, not really responding, not really interacting with other children, but instead wanting to isolate, that's a big thing. The senses. Mm-hmm. You want to be mindful about if there are any things that affect their smell, like they get easily irritated or agitated by something that they smell, something that they taste, the texture of certain foods, mm-hmm. Sound, the volume of a particular sound, mm-hmm. Which is why it's not a stereotype. It just happens to be one of the significant symptoms with a child who has autism, where you'll see them, you know, cover their ears. Mm-hmm. It's too loud. It's too much. Because what happens is that their senses are heightened, you know, when it comes to certain things, as far as, again, the sight, sound, all of that. You just want to be mindful of that. If they seem a little bit more easily agitated, and when they're younger and they don't yet have the language, they might have what people will say is a tantrum, but we know it to be a meltdown, because literally they just feel so overwhelmed, where they are becoming what we also call overstimulated, or if they're not responding at all, they're understimulated. Mm-hmm. So you want to be mindful about the senses. That's a big thing. The language, the socialization. Those are all markers. Maybe I should talk to the pediatrician. You know, maybe I should just double check and make sure, you know, that there's no need for an evaluation.
Okay.
Because as I say, Rita, you know, it can't hurt, in my perspective. Mm-hmm. It can either help or do nothing at all.
Yeah, it's true.
So what's the loss?
And mm-hmm. I'm really happy you went through that, because I'm as you're like explaining, you know, the different, you know, signs, right? I'm thinking about all of the children that might have been disciplined.
Yes.
Right. In some cases, disciplined harshly.
Yes. Think
because of their condition, you know, that the parent, I mean, again, was not aware of, but I'm just thinking right. of like the meltdown, the hand over ears, the tantrums, the overstimulation that the child is, you know, either suffering or experiencing, right. But the manifestation of that to a lot of parents is you're unruly, you know, mm-hmm. And in some cases, you know, these children would get, you know, we don't do this anymore, right?
The beating, spanking.
The spanking, what some would call corporal punishment, whatever.
Yes, yes.
So it's and I'm aware of these children. Like, I'm seeing like this play in my mind. Like, oh my gosh, this kid could have, you know, had autism.
Yep.
There's many of these children that have routinely acted this way. So
I think
that's really important for parents who are listening, or people who have, you know, young children in their lives, to really pay attention, because you're disciplining children who may actually be going through their natural process.
Right. And, you know, that's a great point too, or segue, Rita, because, you know, I believe that also there are peers that you and I have, mm-hmm. you know, who are currently in our age group, and they were dealing with this stuff, and no one helped or could help or knew to help. And so they did have to, unfortunately, you know, face the fire that if they had just had early intervention, someone who knew better. And thankfully, thank God, we are in a place where there is research consistently, continually being done, you know, to try to find out more information, because that's a big thing. Well, autism wasn't as prevalent as it was back then, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden. So it must be this, it must be that. And I'm not saying those are not factors, because environmental is a factor as to how someone can be diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. However, we want to be mindful of the fact that, you know, some people needed that extra attention. They needed to be able to have the treatment, to have the therapies, and it wasn't accessible to them.
Yeah.
My son, at one time, he would have been institutionalized. I can't even imagine that, Rita. Like, that literally breaks my heart, that he would have been misunderstood so much and just put in a room. Like, we can't figure him out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to have him. Yeah. That hurts me to my core to even think of that, you know, but those are the facts. But we've come a long way, and thank God for that. So.
We definitely have. And, you know, I've heard that rhetoric, you know, from many, that, you know, autism is on the rise, you know, with everything going on. And like you said, environment does play a part. But I think the fact that we just weren't aware of what autism really was back then. And if we now, if all of us were to sit back and think about the children, we're like, oh my gosh, these kids probably had, you know, had autism.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to just, you know, touch on this particular point. You know, there's so much controversy, so many myths, so much, you know, misinformation. Yeah. to some degree, right? With respect to the causes of autism. How does somebody get it? Is it genetic? Is it, you know, through lead paint, right? A lot of us lived in apartment buildings. I can attest that I have eaten chipped paint at some point, like I remember, right? And so many are wondering, is that the case? Others are wondering if it's vaccines, because we've been hearing that for such a long time.
Right.
So if, you know, what are some, I guess, known, right, maybe widely shared within the autism community, what are mm-hmm. some known causes of autism?
So definitely environmental factors, as I had mentioned before, that's a big thing. They are trying to identify exactly what those are. Again, constant research. Is there something, like you said, as far as chemical toxins, whatever, that might have played an impact or a role in how this child or baby's brain was developed?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry. Also, there is, as far as genetics, it's not necessarily that a parent will have autism. There might be, though, a genetic mutation as far as having autism. And so that's another thing that's seen as well. There was a myth as far as women who are cold, you know, and that's why the child has autism and they're isolated. Because remember, I said one of the things was that they isolate from other mm-hmm. children and other people. They tend to be sort of in their own world. They play well by themselves. And, you know, if they want to play with you, it's on their terms. Mm-hmm. They want to talk to you as they get older. It's on their terms. Even as an adult, I'm not speaking with you. Why are you talking to me? Yeah. You know, and literally that's just what it is. But for as far as that, as far as the genetic stuff, it's a matter of they still don't know exactly what the gene issue might be, mm-hmm. but the chance of a parent or a family or, excuse me, a couple having a child who has autism, I don't know that stat, but I know that there is a high chance if they had a second child, mm-hmm. let's say they had a child. I have my son who is on the spectrum. My daughter, who's my second child, had a very high chance of being on the spectrum as well. So you will see families where there are, if they have, they will have three children with autism.
Oh my gosh. I can't imagine.
I can't either, because it's a lot of work. It's rewarding, but it is challenging. And I believe, you know, some people take offense to special needs, but I personally don't see anything wrong with that. And I truly believe it takes a special family, a special mother, a special father to be able to deal with the special child that we have. And that's what they are. And I, you know, I dare anyone to knock that. Knock me, come for me for that. It is what it is, because there really truly is something unique about them. Oh, another thing I forgot to mention, lady, I hate to be just all over the place scattered, but as far as the thinking as a sign as well, very literal, very black and white. So as I often say with my son, It's very black and white, no gray. No gray. There's no in between. Mm-hmm. It's either one or the other. Mm-hmm. And so literally, if you, you know, you tell him one thing, it is just that one thing. And I will give an example. Do we have time for me to give an example?
We have time.
So when he was younger, and I think I told you this story maybe on the side personally, but when he was younger, he was about like maybe 3, 4, 5, we were at a camp program and it was me, his sister, him, and a whole bunch of other kids. And they were doing like water hosing stuff with the kids. And my son is the type who never really took well to water and mm-hmm. swimming and all that. And to this point, he still doesn't. Now for other children, especially including children on the spectrum, water is soothing for them. They love it. But for him, wasn't always a fan. Anyway, he knew that because we were also still going through making sure he didn't have potty accidents, toilet training accidents at that time. So he must have been about 3 or 4, yes. And he knows he's not supposed to be wet. No matter what you do, Dave and Nathaniel, you're not supposed to be wet. When you're wet, you have to tell mommy, you have to tell daddy, you don't stay in your wet clothes, you go to the potty, make sure you pee, make sure you poop, so on and so forth. This boy, they were, again, they were doing the water hose on all the kids. And he had on his little swimsuit, his little swim shorts or whatever, no shirt. And I'm watching my daughter. She's on one side, he's on another. And I guess the water got on him. And he literally pulled down his shorts. And all I heard behind me was, there's a naked boy. Oh my gosh. And I was like, what? And I said, it's mine. It's my naked boy. And I said, David, what happened? I was mortified. But I had told him, you're not supposed to stay in wet clothes. Mm-hmm. And so he knew literally, I'm not supposed to be wet. So let me take it off, but not keeping in mind that, hey, I'm in a public place, yeah. a public setting. I can't do that. Not right now, no matter what the instruction or the guideline was, but because he takes it and he runs with it, I have to be very mindful about mm-hmm. adding the contingencies or the extra rule,
yeah. you know? But I think that's a really great example because it helped paint the picture as mm-hmm. to how literal, you know, these individuals take things, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
So I know we talked about early intervention here and there, right? But I wanted to focus on that for a little bit to really highlight the importance of early intervention and how much of a difference that made in your situation and just in general, like how important early intervention is, you know, for a child who does have autism, how that right. can help set up their future.
Right. So absolutely. So when it comes to advocacy for early intervention, if I could be the spokesperson, I would. I believe that it helped to put my son in the right direction because there was no breakthrough, no matter what books I got, no matter what DVDs I showed him, no matter what other tools that I had that everyone was buying, you know, nothing helped, nothing really got through to him. And it wasn't until early intervention, I went ahead and I contacted, you know, I just Googled it, put it in, and it went through the New Jersey, because at the time I'm living in New Jersey, and in my particular neighborhood, my town, you go through the school district mm-hmm. And human services. And so I went through them and they pretty much orchestrated everything. But in early intervention, what they provide, it'll be like the ABA, which is like the behavioral therapy, physical therapy. My son also had another thing I forgot to mention, that because he's outgrown a lot of things, mm-hmm. some of the things I have forgotten. Thank God for like video recording where we can go back and track things, you know. But he used to also walk on his feet. So like his feet would actually curl and he would be standing on the foot. So it's not on his toes. It was on the foot. And that's another sign. I had no idea that they can have a tendency to walk on the foot. But they did physical therapy to help him walk flat. So we would have to say, flat feet, David, flat feet. And that's how he would get back on his feet. Mm-hmm. But he needed that constant reminder. Then it was OT to help develop the fine motor skills. PT is also gross motor skills. So that's the hitting, strengthening his muscle tone because it was very weak. You know, to pick up a ball that's pretty light and reasonable and wait for him to be able to pick up easily, he would act like it's so heavy. Mm-hmm. In the world. So the PT was to help to build that muscle strength, and he, you know, he'll still get it, and it has helped. The OT was the fine motor skills, being able to pick up his spoon, you know, and the fork, and, you know, eventually the crayon and the pencil. That's where the OT comes in. Speech, obviously, is for the speech, to develop the language. All of that was essential because those were his initial markers in order for him to build a foundation to go to school. Mm-hmm. So for early intervention, I believe across the board, it goes from about 18 months, maybe I want to say 2 years old, till your third birthday, the baby's third birthday. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, they transition you into like a Head Start or pre-K. He went to pre-K 3, but he needed that foundation in order for him to be able to succeed and to excel in school. That was a significant thing. So it helps to build the foundation for those intricate beginning stages that they just can't get to on their own. Yeah. Or with us, no matter what we do. And it's not personal. It's not us. Mm-hmm. It's just not our expertise. And that's okay. That's yeah. okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wanted to highlight that because, you know, shout out to Jersey, I guess, because my yes. aunt, you know, it has been living in Jersey for a long time. And so one of my cousins who's like well in his 20s now, actually. Mm-hmm. But I remember when he was a baby, you know, looking back now, I remember like his, like, you know, the nonverbal, the squealing, the screeching,
yes.
like, hyperactivity. And my aunt, you know, being somebody who was born and raised in the Caribbean, somehow though, you know, was able to break away from the mold and was like, I'm seeking services. And she happened to live in Jersey. And she would always talk about the amazing services that Jersey has for children. And so her son, I guess in her particular town, received services like even throughout high school. And even when he went to college, they still paired him up.
Mm-hmm,
but mm-hmm. he's verbal. He, you know, he speaks, again, a little standoffish, likes to stay to himself.
On his own terms.
Yeah, yep. A little standoffish, likes to, you know, loves the video games, loves to be, but he was active enough that he was able, like he had gotten a job. He was going to church on his own and was part of a youth group, and he had friends. I was like, you have friends, you know, because there's just so much of an idea of somebody who has autism. But if it was not for that early intervention,
it's a difference.
Yeah. I don't think that he would have been the person that he is today. So
he does. Mm-hmm.
So we talked about early intervention, and sometimes people wonder, you know, is it a medication thing as well? Do children with autism, do they have to be put on medication? Is there a holistic way to, you know, I guess, quote unquote, like, you know, treat autism? But as we've been talking today, it seems like it's not something that's really, like, it's not a treatable thing, right?
So yeah, I feel like it's more so something that there's acceptance, but there's also, there needs to be management. Mm-hmm. You know, and just like we need structure and routine to some extent in our lives, just as regular adults, mm-hmm. you know, whether we're parents or not, you know, we have our to-do lists, we have our planners, we have our schedule alerts on our phones, our tablets, whatever mm-hmm. else, to keep us on top of our stuff. Children in general thrive on routine. A child on the spectrum excels on routine and structure because they know what to expect. Therefore, the meltdowns are not as frequent because you're consistent. Because again, remember that no gray, black and white. I know that regardless of when they, you know or develop the knowledge about time and the ability to be able to read time, they are able to see the sequence. Okay, first I eat breakfast, then I, you know, I go ahead and I do my devotion, or I, you know, read a book, or I go play outside, then I do my schoolwork, then I do this, then mm-hmm. I do that. It's a schedule, it's a routine, and it keeps them level. It keeps them, it helps them to manage some of the, I don't want to say negative symptoms, but let's call it that for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. But it helps to manage that. So you will see less of the meltdowns, less of the feeling overwhelmed, being understimulated, if they understand, hey, okay, before we go into this particular place, remember, you can't do this. So as an example, my son, we discovered and identified that he has a gift for drums, for music. Mm-hmm. And we've known that for a very long time, since he was like almost two. So he didn't start saying his words till first words until he was about three. And so, but before then, music was his thing. He'd drum and he'd do all that. Anyway, needless to say, every time we would go to church, we go to church every weekend. And when we would go to a church, if we would go visit a church, he would let go of our hands and run as soon as he get a chance at that new church to the drum set. And he just wants to be there, and he just wants to watch the drummer. And sometimes, even if the drummer's not there and there's no drumsticks for him to play himself, he just wants to study mm-hmm. and analyze and sort of fixate and focus in. And he's watching and he's just taking it all in. And so I say all that to say, ahead of time, we had to tell him because we already knew. And if he went missing, as he got older, it's not, we didn't keep track of our child, but he was older. So we mm-hmm. weren't like holding him like this. And we're like, where's David? And then we'd be like, he's by the drums. And sure enough, we turn and that's where he was. You knew where he was. He yep. was by the drums. And so it just had to be, because sometimes it wasn't always appropriate. Sometimes it was disruptive. Mm-hmm. David and Daniel, you can't go in and run to the drums, buddy. We'll go ahead and try to see the drums after church, okay? Okay, mommy. Okay, daddy. But it had to be something that was said from the beginning to sort of reinforce that message. Mm-hmm. Structure.
Yeah, structure. I can mm-hmm. see that. I can see that. So I want to just, I guess, go more toward the raising of awareness and really, you know, where the Black community fits in with all of this, right? I don't know what the stats are, but I'm just trying to understand when it comes to autism, I guess, and if you're aware, which demographic mm-hmm. seems to be the most affected by this? Is it the typical Black and Latino? Or, you know, because unfortunately, I find that we're always at the short end of every stick.
At least from my understanding is that it's actually quite the opposite. Mm. It's like a white boy's condition when it, you know, it really isn't, but they are the ones that are most prevalent as far as who's seen in the media, who gets diagnosed. And it's also a matter of, or children who are in more well-established school districts, more education. Parents may have more education or more wherewithal, or a parent who is inclined with, my child will not be a statistic. Something's not right and I don't know what to do. So I'm going to find somebody who knows what to do, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what they will do. But it tends to be, and I don't believe that means that a majority of the children who are diagnosed are white boys, but I believe it's just a matter that girls are harder to diagnose because as per the research, they tend to mask their symptoms much better than boys do. Mm-hmm. And their symptoms are mainly more towards that, the Asperger's that we described and talked about before, more so what's on their terms, as far as the social cues, picking up on things, focusing in on certain things. But it's like, oh, she's a girl. She's just playing mm-hmm. with all the dolls and putting them all together and all in this order. And that's okay. She's playing.
Yeah.
No, she's actually having a moment where she's fixating on this particular thing. And if you attempt to interrupt her, all hell will break loose. Mm-hmm. That's a sign, Mom. That's a sign that that's not okay, you know? But it's definitely mixed my understanding of it. And I believe that lots of people are still underdiagnosed because of a lack of education. Mm-hmm. So awareness needs to be tapping into, even though there is a conflict with Autism Speaks, it's still a prevalent organization. Mm-hmm. AutismSociety.org is another one that has great resources. And you can find your local chapters for all of these organizations and just Googling, you know, I'm so sorry, autism awareness organizations, autism awareness groups, so on and so forth. And looking for something in your local area and neighborhood. The best way for us to go ahead and to make a dent or make a mark for our community in the Black community is that more Black moms, Black dads, Black sisters, brothers, loved ones of someone who has autism, we need to speak out more about it. We need to be informed and share that information with someone else so that we know that this is something that is present. It's not a white boy's disease. It's not. It can happen to us too, you know, and it's not, and there's nothing wrong with you if it happened to you. It doesn't make you any less of a mother, any less of a father, any less of anything in terms of being seen with this child, with this person. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a matter of education and information, but coming from a real voice, not just an organization, not just a company. It has to come because we're community oriented. That's who we are as people of color, as Black people. Mm-hmm. You know, we believe in community. We believe in relationships. And so it has to come from us, from within.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that because, you know, I often wonder because, again, you know, when it comes to everything, it's like, you know, the Black community, the Latino community, it's like we're always at the short end of the stick. But I've always imagined autism to be, you know, the white boy disease, right? Because like you said, that's the poster child for mm-hmm. autism. But then as again, you know, thinking about everything we spoke about today, I'm like, there's definitely underdiagnosis happening within the community, mm-hmm. which may tilt the scale in that there may be more children of color who actually are affected by autism than, you know, their counterpart. But like you said, you know, unless you're lucky enough to live in these districts, right? Or to have the, because even with sometimes when you have the education, you know, sometimes your background trumps education that you have. And you've succumbed to the, well, I don't want people to think that my family or my child is dumb or whatever it is.
Right.
And they end up, you know, keeping the child away from very necessary treatment. So.
Yeah, and that's a great point too, Rita, because as far as districts, when you were mentioning that, let me say this, that was a big thing for us. You know, when I settled down in New Jersey after we got married, my husband and I, where we moved, we didn't think about school district. Please, if you're listening, you're about to get engaged or married, moving in, settling down with your partner, and you want to have children, consider the district that you're in and check the school grades. You know, that's everything right now. Because for us, even though they did great when he had early intervention, you know, they came to the home, to our home, and did all that, we had to move when it was time for him to go to school because we were in a city that I wouldn't say it was like impoverished. It wasn't. It was upcoming. But it was more urban than suburban. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there is a sort of a track record where the resources, the services mm-hmm. are not as equipped or not as adequate, you know, as they should be or could be for our children. And so I remember us getting the proposal of, okay, if he goes to the school for the fall, for the school year, in the district we were in, the first one, he was going to have this amount of services, so on and so forth. And my husband went on greatschools.org. So that's when y'all check that out, greatschools.org. You could put in, you know, the city, the zip code, whatever, and you can look at the grades of these schools of the district. So anyway, we went ahead and he checked the numbers. And on great schools, it's graded between 1 and 10. The district, and I won't say the name of the town, just leave that there. But the district was, they were rating in ones and twos and threes out of 10. We're like, if we're going to give our son a shot, this might not be where we need to live. Mm-hmm. And we ended up moving, where we relocated to. Across the board, the numbers were nines and tens. Mm. We are in a predominantly white an Asian town. And my son has been the only Black child in his class since pre-K three. He's now in third grade. So that's pre-K three, four, kindergarten, one, two, three, six classes that he's been in. And he's been the only Black child. And so, you know, we know that he's getting the best quality services. They are number three. Our district is number three in all of New Jersey, if not number two. They may be number two right now. And I believe they are number five in the whole United States. And wow. So the numbers are up there as far as children being able to excel and to do well. And anyone who has known my son, as you know him from birth till now, every year, you can see the progress. Yeah. You see the difference. You're like, oh my gosh, he did that. He said that. I can't. Do you know what he said, Jen? I was like, yeah, I know. You know, and it's me. And so it would be a disservice for him to be anywhere else, but it's unfortunate that he has to be. He can only be in this particular area, which is very pricey and very expensive. And it hurts our pockets to have to be there. But you do what you got to do for your kid, you know, and that's what we did. However, there definitely needs to be more of a change. There needs to be a change in our school systems because it's not fair to our kids who are in the districts where, unfortunately, it is what it is. It's predominantly Black and Hispanic people of color. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And it's, you know, as you're talking about it, him being the only Black kid in the class, you know, some people, you know, when they think about culture versus education, and it's like, how do you weigh that? But in a situation where you're dealing with a special needs child, I mean, I guess the onus is just more so on the parents now to, outside of school, make sure that they're, you know, surrounding the child with, you know, Black culture. So, it's very interesting, very layered, these conversations, right?
They really are, lady. It's a lot to unpack, but it's so important for someone else who's going through it. I know that my son's life is not about him. It's for someone else.
Yeah.
You know, and I really feel like that with all of us. Our lives are for someone else to see, to be able to be encouraged for, to be able to know, oh, I can get through this. Oh, mm-hmm. I can conquer this. Oh, I don't have to stay in a negative place. Oh, this isn't the end all if my child gets this diagnosis. Mm-hmm. They can live. And even if my child never speaks, there's so much technology right now, you know, that they have the devices that can speak for them, you know, other communication tools. And it doesn't, again, you've got to be able to dig deep and sometimes not even dig that deep.
Yeah.
You just have to sort of just be present and stop, like, block out the noise. Everybody else's kid what Johnny and Susie are accomplishing, what they're getting done. You know, we did the same exact things. I have more education than their parents. How could this be happening mm-hmm. to me? You have to stay present and be in the place and the position of where you are.
Yeah.
Nurture your side of the grass, and that's all you can do.
I like that. I like the nurture your side of the grass, because a lot of time we're so concerned about what's on the other side of the fence,
yes.
right? The grass is greener.
Yes. On the other side.
Yeah, no, I think this was really important, because awareness is definitely key. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of, you know, mothers, families that are suffering because they don't yeah. have they don't know where to access the resources, because no one's having these conversations, and they feel like they're alone because they, right. you know, they have a child who is special, like you said, you know, right. they're special kids who need special attention. But a lot of times, you know, where either we feel like either we're not equipped to do it, but that's only because we're not empowered, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it takes more than us within ourselves to get empowered. We need, again, community, relationship, find your people. You know, my people just happened in the very beginning to not look like me, mm-hmm. you know, but they incur as far as color. You know, it was a whole bunch of other white moms. but what the difference, though, was that these were moms who come from backgrounds where they were either raised in more urban areas, suburban. They weren't the completely, like, I'm in this posh neighborhood, mm-hmm. I'm untouchable, you know, can't relate to you, I'm better than you. They didn't have that sort of attitude, upbringing, or just temperament about them. I mean, I wouldn't be hanging out with them either. So for me, it was just like, I could relate to you in so much. We were able to relate beyond color, but I knew for my son, I have to do the church thing, because that's where he finds his people. I have to have him around my neighborhood, my childhood friends with their children, because I grew up in that environment with predominantly people of color, mm-hmm. if not all Caribbean,
yeah.
you know, predominantly Haitian. And so for me, that's just a big thing for me. But, and I want him to be able to have that, and my daughter as well. And so that's why it's important to have, like you said, Rita, completely agree, those times when you can expose them to the culture, making sure that that's consistent. And I've got to do better with that. But COVID, it's not helping.
COVID is not helping a lot of people. COVID has become divisive, but that's another conversation.
Another conversation.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we covered a lot of ground. I mean, again, this is a very, very layered conversation, but I think we covered a lot of ground in terms of, you know, what autism is, why awareness is necessary, why we need it. And hopefully, you know, through this conversation and through you sharing your experience, someone, you know, is looking at tomorrow like, oh, I can do this.
I can do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think that that's the key. Just being able, again, to see tomorrow is a new day for a new opportunity. I tell that to my clients all the time. As I told you, I'm a therapist. And so it's about empowering as well as counseling and coaching. And it's true. You've just got to literally stand in where you are and identify how you can do it better the next day and the next day after that, and count your blessings, count the wins, count your wins. That's such a big thing. And give yourself some grace that some days are going to be bad. Some days are going to be really negative. As I was alluding to before, Rita, I'm very thankful for video and recording and archives of Google Photos, or for you all with your iPhones.
Listen,
iCloud.
You mean this
whatever.
Thing right here?
Whatever. It's my thing. My thing right here.
The green. But
my whole thing is that essentially it's just about being able to be in a position and in a place where I can go back and see. And sometimes I have gone back and I have seen those days where he would just be crying and I would be frustrated. And I took video of it mm-hmm. because I also wanted his dad to see it too, because it's another struggle where he wasn't fully seeing what I was seeing. And so our perspectives were very different. Mm-hmm. And that's why you need community, because oftentimes one parent may be seeing it more than the other, and that can cause a rift as well.
Yeah.
Marriage and the family. So being mindful about that.
Okay.
So thank you, Rita. This is great.
No, of course. But I want to give you an opportunity to shout out your social media and your business, because yeah. you are a licensed therapist. You see clients, and maybe somebody is like, wow, this woman's spirit, you know, I'm connecting to it. I want to reach out to her, or I have a friend who I think she'd be great, you know, for. So shout out your business, your social media, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. So y'all, my name again is Jennifer Wilshire. My business is Lifeline Therapy Center. You can find me at Lifeline Therapy Center on Instagram and on Facebook. And basically, I do private practice with individuals, couples, and families. Specialty is really with couples to really try and to understand how you can show up well first within yourself and then for one another, whoever that person is that you're in relationship with. You can catch me on there, or Jennifer, it's just one N, at LifelineTherapyCenter.com, Jennifer at LifelineTherapyCenter.com. And I look forward to connecting with you all. Definitely on there. Need to be a bit more active, like my sister Rita. I'm getting there, Rita. I'm trying to catch up.
The struggle is real.
Yes, ma'am. But yes, that's where y'all can find me. And I am based in New Jersey, but right now I am, due to the pandemic, I'm doing everything telehealth. And the government has pretty much broken down the walls of state guidelines. So if you're in New York, if you're in Connecticut, you can call me. We could connect. And I can still see you, because, you know, right now everyone is seeking and searching for support and help. And that's what I'm here to do. So,
all right.
That's me, ma'am.
Well, thank you again, Jennifer Wilshire with one N.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, for being a guest. You know, this was such a great conversation. And again, just being, you know, thanking you for your vulnerability to even talk about your experience. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, for some people it can be a very hard topic to really share. So I thank you for just being vulnerable and open. And again, I know that somebody is going to be able to take some gems from this conversation.
Yay. Thank you again, Rita, for the opportunity. It was great to be here.
Of course, mm-hmm. of course. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning into another episode of According to RP, powered by Black Ivy Media. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will talk to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday. Can't wait to come back.